Okay, I'll go ahead and go through these instructions one more time and we'll get started. My name is Brian. I'll be the administrator on today's call this afternoon. You can email me at editor@marketingexperiments.com if you have any questions or problems with the notes page. You should have all received a reminder email about 2 hours ago with most of this information, but if not, you can point your web browser directly to mecgroup.com/mec_research_log, and we will ask you to hit refresh in your browser several times as we add some data and some other notes that we'll be using for this afternoon's presentation. You may also want to take the email subject line survey, which is at the top of that page, if you haven't already done so. And we'll be sharing the results of that and several other surveys throughout the course of the call. Some key commands on your telephone. *4 will increase the volume on your line if you're having any trouble hearing. *6 will mute your line. We will be staying in lecture mode for most of today's call, but when we open it up for questions a couple times, if you are in a noisy room, we do ask that you hit *6 at that time to keep the background noise to a minimum. You can read a brief biography of Dr. Flint McLaughlin at the bottom of the notes page. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. McLaughlin, who will be this afternoon's primary presenter. Dr. McLaughlin, are you there?
Yes, I am. Maybe I had just a bit of difficulty hearing you. I assume that means you've introduced me.
I have.
Okay, well, then I should start talking. Let me think of something clever to say. I think our topic is marketer's intuition. And there is no doubt that intuition and moments of great insight can have a profound impact on your marketing efforts. But in fact, we all know of business leaders who've achieved extraordinary success for their companies by following their instincts and capitalizing on moments of great insight. However, when we get down to the details of how best to communicate our value proposition in words and design, intuition appears to be a great deal less reliable. And we're kind of studying that, wondering how much can we depend on our own intuition when making marketing decisions. I think it's really critical, and it's an important piece that deserved MEC's attention, because most of us are in a position that prevents us from ever being able to test every conceivable option or opportunity that presents itself. So typically, even a dedicated marketeer who is very, very prepared and believes in the viability of testing and its importance must constantly make decisions based on probabilities, sometimes with limited information, and unable to actually verify every assumption. So what do you do? How much can you depend on your intuition when making a marketing decision? And more than that, and something we want to talk about later in this conference today, is there some way to quantify the categories of decisions that intuition might be useful in and those that it may not be useful in, so that you learn an effective way to blend intuition and testing? With all of that in mind, we designed a series of experiments to see how accurate a marketer's intuition might be, and we want to get into those with you this afternoon. Some of you participated in those experiments, voting on various creatives and helping us kind of test the market. Now, I want to say this before we get into the data itself. We have an unusual audience. There are certainly some expert small marketers. In our last survey, 33% of our audience were consultants. We have a lot of major publishers online and some of the largest companies in the world and some of the directors of marketing for some of the largest organizations in the world who participate in these calls. So it's very interesting with this mix of professionals to determine how capable they are in making educated guesses for the purposes of marketing creative. So having said that, I'd like to just begin by talking about our first test of an offer page. In a previous optimization effort for one of our test sites, we believed that customers visiting the site with an 800 by 600 or a 1024 by 768 resolution monitor were not finding the relevant sales language for the primary site product unless they scroll down the page. So we set up an ABC split test for this hypothesis. Page A was the original. Page B featured slightly shortened data and used a click here anchor text to take visitors down the page. And this page showed the order process on a 1024 by 7068 resolution monitor and on an 800 by 600 resolution monitor, and it displayed the offer copy for the primary product. Page C was a radical redesign in which the order process was partially viewable on 800 by 600 and higher. It used two columns to make more information available above the fold. Now, you can actually see those. They should be links 1, 2, and 3 in your research log notes. And by going to those, you can see the pages and the creative that were voted on. And essentially, before revealing the test results, we polled the audience of one of our web conferences, and we asked them to vote for which page they thought would perform the best. And here is a breakdown of their votes. You should look in your notes now. Brian will be refreshing them, and as he does so, you should see a new table appear in your notes, just an F5 or a refresh in your browser will be necessary throughout this conference as we keep adding information to the notes that you are working from. But what you'll notice is that page A received 22 votes, page B received 51 votes, and page C received 103 votes. Respectively, that's 12.5%, 28.98%, and 58.52%. In addition, many of the members of our team who had worked on many tests felt that C could perform better. Our experts and many of the seasoned marketers on the phone all seemed to believe that page C would outpull the other two pages. Here are the results of our testing. If you look in your notes now, we're going to drop in a new table. So you want to refresh your page, and as you refresh your page, you're going to see the sad, bitter truth. Of page A, 34% of our site visitors, percent of traffic to new sales was tragic. The change was zero. Percent of traffic on page B was 33%. Essentially, conversion was 15.5%. And page C, as you can see, was terrible in terms of its returns. What you need to understand, essentially, without having to drill down too deeply in the data set, is page B outperformed the original page by 15.57%. Page C was a dismal failure. Incidentally, if I was running an MBA program for some of our audience are professors. If I was planning an MBA program right now, curriculum, or working in any courses related to marketing, it doesn't just have to be marketing, but I think I would begin my classes with some tests like this to identify, help students know what they don't know. In this case, a group of seasoned experts, many of them with sophisticated marketing training, failed miserably at determining which page would perform best. What seemed intuitive to most marketers is not always the case. In this test, our hypothesis about important sales language appearing higher on the page proved correct. However, the two-column approach of page C was ineffective. Now, in a previous conference, I mentioned this. I didn't get into the deep data, and I only pointed out something that I would offer to you as a caveat. It's not in my notes, but it may help you right now as you're designing pages and tests on your own site, and that is, tests indicate, and my experience indicates, that a vertical presentation of an offer is always better than a horizontal presentation of an offer. Now, this is, though I use the word always, it's a generalization, but those of you that are depending on presenting important information in horizontal format, that is multiple columns, etc., you're missing out on probably the most effective path. It's very difficult to beat a vertical presentation where you're absolutely controlling the sequence in which the information is being presented. I'll go a step further. Some of the old-fashioned sales letter approaches from the hardcore sales marketers like Corey Riddell, which are laden with hype, and often, in my opinion, offensive, and even lacking in what I would say honesty, because they have JavaScript tags that, or JavaScript on the page that says, you know, this offer will expire as of 12 midnight on a date, and the date changes every day. To me, that's wrong. It's wrong because it's a lie, and we shouldn't do it. But regardless of that, and by the way, I'm not trying to be negative on Corey. I've never met him, so please don't take that wrong. And I know he's had a recent tragedy. I'm just talking about the classic long copy sales letter. They still work. And some of us think they work because of the hype. There's two reasons why they work. One of them is the actual amount of content. Long copy sells. But most importantly, and this is a point that I think is missed in every clinic or every marketing piece of marketing data I've seen thus in terms of books and advice and articles. We all talk about long copy when we read those letters, but it's vertical copy that often makes the difference. Vertical in that you control the sequence in which people are moving through the offer. And in this case, the page C is a much more attractive page. One would naturally assume it's going to outperform. It's got everything above the fold, but it did not. And vertical copy still was superior. I would also point out this. In almost every marketing group I ever talk with, there's a few common truisms that I hear over and over again. One of them is, you know, but is the offer above the fold? I hear that in big publishing houses and companies who've been at some, I don't know, conference and they've heard talk about that. Listen, we need to test those assumptions. I'm way less concerned about above the fold than many people are. I'm more concerned about the content of the offer. I'm more concerned about the headline to get you engaged in the offer and about the interest builder in the first paragraph of the offer than I am about whether or not the key data is above the fold. So that's another issue for another time, but let's go on to multivariate testing in another example and another test. By the way, marketers, you didn't bomb on everything, so hang in there, and I'll give you more data here in a moment, and you know we can kind of balance what we've seen in this first experiment. But in our recent clinic on multivariate testing, we looked at a site called Joanne.com, which serves millions of arts and crafts enthusiasts, and the company used Offermatica to set up multivariate tests in a number of site areas. And after one round of testing, they had a pretty significant set of results. We talked about this in a clinic, but it seemed germane, and many of you were not on that clinic. Essentially, they registered following improvements in their site. Now, if you look, you'll see those improvements. There's a new chart that should be dropped in your notes. Refresh your page. Just hit an F5 if you're in Explorer or choose Refresh, and you'll see the improvement was 137% on the average size of an order, and the revenue per visitor went up 209%, with sewing machine conversions improved by 30%. But the most remarkable lesson, I mean, of all in this whole thing, was the offer that accomplished this result was what appeared to be the least viable. This was the offer: buy two sewing machines and save 10%. Now, I just pointed this out. It wasn't in the notes, but I pointed it out extemporaneously in my last conference. But you show that offer to a group of marketers, and the first thing they're going to think is, right, I'm going to go out right away and buy another sewing machine so I can save 10%. Weak offer. And that makes sense. In most cases, it would be a weak offer, but clearly it wasn't in this test. And this is the value of testing. It's why it's so important. Now, I suspect, and having done some deeper analysis, it appears that the difference was that people, and I'm quoting, were pulling their friends together, and we sold enough machines to outperform single purchases. This is according to Lindsley Donnelly, the chief operating officer of the company. Now, despite the fact that most of us would ask who needs two sewing machines, this close-knit community proved that there was a different context in which to evaluate that headline. People were calling their friends and buying sewing machines together. We could have never known that relying on intuition. It reminds me of an experiment I did, price testing some years ago, and it's not in these notes, but I think you'll find it fascinating. And some of you can use this right now to probably increase your conference attendance. We had a conference that was $185. This is not with MEC, it was a test. $185 to attend a one-day, six-hour conference. And I wanted to increase the average value per customer. I also wanted to increase back-of-room sales, which is where most of the revenue is made in a conference. And so having thought it through, I tested this price point, $225 for two. What we saw was no drop in conversion, a major increase in price per, average value per customer, and twice as many people with which to approach at the back of the room in sales because most people brought a colleague. It was very, very instrumental and it impacted the company's financials for the entire year. So even the smartest marketers are often proven wrong by testing. Intuition doesn't seem to be a substitute for a well-designed experiment, but let's look at the next test. This is a very, very simple test. We were testing four pay-per-click headlines on Google AdWords, and we pulled an audience, a large audience of marketers, asking them to select which headline they thought would generate the highest click-through rate. And the ads were tested in a selection of keywords. If you want to see the keywords, you're dropping those into their notes, Brian?
Yep, they should be there now.
Okay, look in your notes. You'll see the keywords. Now, if you, most of you here know how AdWords work. So essentially, these were the keywords, i.e., the search terms that we tied the ads to. And then if you'll look in your notes, you'll see what our marketers predicted would be the best of these four. Read Comics, Daily Comics, Go Comics, and U Comics. 20.8% of the audience chose Read Comics, 60.86% chose Daily Comics, 11.94% chose Go Comics, and 6.39% chose U Comics. Now, am I correct? That experiment is closed out now. Is that correct, Brian? It is.
It is.
Yes. Okay, so essentially, the majority of the audience chose the second headline, Daily Comics. From the data set, we can tell you how well you performed, so if you would please look in your notes at a refreshed table and more data. The first is Read Comics, Daily Comics, Go Comics, and U Comics, and you'll see that three of them were neck and neck with Daily Comics edging out the other two. We might suggest here that marketers' intuition was relatively accurate. Now, I want to point out that I know it is a 30%, depending on how you look at the number, 1.2%, 9% may or may not be a significant number. It is certainly significant enough to say that Daily Comics is a better name, but there's a marginal difference. There's no runaway winner here. So we can conclude that our audience was able to predict with some success a better headline. And the key point is that intuition proved sufficient to select the most descriptive headline, which performed the best of our selected group. Now, what would be fascinating is a follow-up as to why Daily Comics was chose. I think I can tell you, but I'd like to base my statements on hard data. What I will say is that of the three tests we've looked at right now, from an intuition standpoint, marketers were able to select a slightly better headline in the case of the Google AdWords experiment. So let's look at one fourth experiment, and then let's talk about what all this means, because really there are two questions here. How much can you rely on your intuition? I mean, that's the question I'd want to know, and the second question is, when can you rely on your intuition? So having said that, I'm looking at a new set of tests, Dana. This one's really my favorite. It's quite fascinating. We ran a test on you when we sent an invitation for you to participate in a test. We ran three separate emails with three separate subject lines and measured responses. And if you look at this, the three headlines were Test Your Marketing Intuition, an NBC, an MEC invitation, colon, that is Test Your Marketing Skills, and So You Think You're a Marketing Expert, Prove It Here. That's a very sales letter type headline. All in all, I want to look at the data, but not yet. You should see the chart, but not the results. Is that the way it is right now, Brian? Have you dropped in the finals yet?
I've dropped in only the survey, not the final results.
Okay. Now, the survey was done live, and we're actually still getting data returns. We're going to give you the most accurate numbers as of about 4:20 here in just a second. What I want to do before I look at that is go to discussion about these headlines and see what it is that you think or why it is that you think one particular headline might be better than another. I need your input on this. I'm going to ask that we, in a moment, take the phone off lecture mode. I'm going to ask that if there's any background noise in your office, please press *6 to mute the background noise. This may or may not work. We could do all this by email, but I prefer the live feedback, which means it's messy. But messy is sometimes better. So I'll deal with the risk here, but it would really help us if you're paying attention. If you want to mute your phone at *6 and then you want to talk, you just hit *6 again and you can talk, and then you can mute it. I'm going to ask somebody to tell me, and I know it takes a little courage. You're not asking me the type of question I normally ask, allow you to ask, where, you know, there's a problem and you're asking for help. But I need somebody brave to tell me which headline is best and why you think that headline is going to work best. So say your first name and let me hear
from
you.
This is John, and I chose Marketing Intuition. It just seemed like it was very clear to me what I was going to be opening that on.
Excellent. Excellent. I appreciate your honesty.
My name is Al Baker.
Go ahead, Al.
I chose the third one because it challenged me.
You chose the third one because
it challenged
you. Challenge
to me, and I accepted the challenge.
I want my staff, and I have a number of researchers on the phone, to be making notes of these good comments. The because is very useful. Thank you. Someone else. This
my
is
name
Mike.
Is David. Hello.
My name
is David.
Go ahead, Mike, and then we'll have David. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, this is Mike. The reason I chose the third one, So You Think You're a Marketing Expert, Prove It Here, was because psychologically I would like to think I'm a marketing expert, and thus it attracted me.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, David, it's your turn. Go ahead, and then we'll take another one. Go ahead, David.
This is David. I chose Test Your Marketing Intuition. The reason is, we as marketers are very used to these kind of offers. Click here, go here, you know, with these kind of
lines. My name
lines.
Is John.
So that's the
and
reason why I chose the first one. It was
I'm
more
very
direct.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Again, I want my team to take notes on these answers. There was a lady speaking, and there was some overlap. If you'd like to speak again, just tell us your first name and what you chose.
Marianne? I just.
Okay, Marianne, go ahead. I heard a first name. Go ahead.
I chose Test Your Marketing Intuition because I thought it was a very clear call to action, and also the word test, it's a verb, it's right
call
in the front.
For
and,
a marketing experiment.
Like to be tested, I think.
Website.
Okay. All right, someone else now. I've heard Marianne, just say your first name. Let me call your name, and that way we can all hear you clearly, and then your reason. First name?
Mike.
Susan.
Okay, Mike, go ahead. And then Susan, first Mike, go ahead.
I chose number two because I trust MEC and the research that you do. Therefore, it's something more valuable than just a random subject line.
Well, since you said kind words about MEC, Mike, we're in favor of your – we'll try to manipulate the data to make you look right. Thank you. Thank you. Suzanne, go ahead.
Hi. First, thanks for that tip about using this in class. I think that's an awesome way to open a class. But I chose number three, and I don't know if it was psychologically related to the idea of Google just has this new thing out with the search engine, the search, what do they call it, professional. You can get certified, and I was looking at that test around the same time that that came in, so I don't know if that had something to do with it, but the idea of testing always is a challenge. It was appealing to me. Plus, I recognized the sender name. So the subject having the MEC in it wasn't as important to me as it was to Mike, maybe because of that reason of recognizing the sender.
Interesting.
This is Mo.
Well, let's do one more. One more person. Go ahead.
Mo?
Okay, go ahead. Is it Mo, did you say?
Mo, M-O.
Mo. Okay, go ahead, Mo.
I did test your marketing intuition, and the reason is because I'm a marketer, and I do market research, or I used to do market research for a .com, and I realized that we were so off on so many guesstimations. Different departments were about their own area, and I stayed very neutral in my data.
I would say it's probably
but
number one.
But one of the questions we would always ask is, what do you think the answer is going to be? And it was, even though it didn't say prove it here, like the third one, I found that to be both a little challenging and also how, you know what, that's exactly what this is about and what I wanted to do was test my marketing intuition.
Interesting. I think I want to take one more. It's a very... it's a good answer, Mo, and I appreciate your help. Let me go ahead and take one more person. Go ahead.
Hey, this is GC Vigasia.
Yes.
I chose number two for several reasons, actually. Out of the three of them, I pretty much understood the first one and the third one, but if I was a new surfer, I might not know exactly what MEC was, and I guess that kind of intrigued me, thinking that, let's find out, what is this invitation all about? And then the marketing portion of it, even though if I'm a marketer, it came second, but the MEC was what really kind of, lured me into that, thinking, I can maybe find something else out here about MEC.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's go, as we get ready to go to our data, let me just tell you this is my experience. I work with so many, we come in and forge these research partnerships with groups in the private sector, and we do all these tests to glean data. And what I see in when I get in with a new company is you're in a room. Sometimes, in our last, we just recently had a meeting, and there must have been 20 people there with all experts from various parts of the organization. We just had a meeting with a round table or a large, it's a conference table, and the head of global research and different groups were all in there together, and you're talking with them. And it's amazing to me how much banter goes back and forth and speculation goes back and forth in these types of areas, because people are drawing out of their various contexts on their intuition and making decisions and sometimes even staking their numbers on, what the outcome will be. And if we'd all done that today, it would be fascinating. I mean, if we were all sitting in a room with a CEO of some organization and we were all talking about which one of these we thought was best, and he didn't tell us, but he had the data at his fingertips, I wonder what he would think if he could pull that data and look. And in some sense, we're able to help you get that data when we're doing this kind of research. But let's look right now and see what we learn about ourselves. And so, Brian, give me the latest numbers. Actually, I don't have the latest, Brian. My numbers are about 2 hours old, and you're probably the only one with a finger on the helm. I'm going to walk over to my screen. I'm sitting at my conference table right now. I'm going to walk over to my screen, and let's look at the numbers. All right. So here's what we discover. The most popular term in our research was the term, so you think you're a marketing expert. Most of you, 341 people voted, 49%, nearly half of our audience for that. The worst performing term was, so you think you're a marketing expert, prove it here. That is, at least 50% of us chose the wrong headline. You look at the table, there's kind of a variance here. The highest click-through rate came from an MEC invitation, test your marketing skills. I'm sorry, the highest open rate and the highest click-through rate came from test your marketing intuition. Everything was identical, of course, in the test except the headlines. So, interestingly, the our group here basically favored the worst performing subject line in the test. Now, why? I mean, that's the key thing. Why did almost 50% of the respondents choose the worst line? I mean, it may be, and I'm listening to people, and we need to ask ourselves that question, and I'd love to get your emails, I mean, because we may integrate some of that into the final report before we release it, because I want to learn. I want to know. I mean, MEC exists to discover what really works. But as I think about it, you'd have to read my, I don't know how many of you have read my feature article, not a report, but a feature article on, it's called Transparent Marketing, but it talks about the tone of marketing messages. Number three, I think, was attractive for two reasons. It matches the most common tone used in popular marketing messages, which I think, by the way, fails. And transparent marketing is an argument for a whole different way to talk to your audience. Headline two reflects that. Headline one does as well. But there's a new way, a new tone in marketing messages that I believe is far more effective. But I think there's a second reason. And I heard it come out. I heard someone say, I chose it because, essentially, I mean, the gist of his statement was because it challenged me, and I wanted to see, you know. And someone else say because I want to think, I think of myself as a marketing expert, and I wanted to see how I performed and so on. You've got to understand something that's going to impact negatively your intuition over and over again. If you are in the marketing business, you are likely a different breed of animal than the person you are marketing to. Most of us have a uniquely suited set of distinctives in our personality that qualify us or that attract us to this industry. And I'll have to say, you do not share those traits with the average consumer that you're trying to reach. And one of the things that fouls up our intuition is that we assume the consumer is like us, and the consumer is not like you. Now, you know, I'm making a general statement. You may be a marketer who markets to marketers, or you may be a very unusual marketer, but I'm talking in general. I have found, and I would love to work with, in fact, we could pull this off with another academic institution where we actually did some psychology of marketing research right along with some core marketing, you know, classical marketing research to look at the traits of a marketer as they are reflected or how, as they differ from the psychological traits of the audience that they're trying to reach. But I'll tell you something, it's different. Even in B2B, it's different. Even in B2B, it's different. Marketers are a different type of person. So that may be why that third headline was attractive. But I'll tell you what I find about the third headline. I'll tell you why I expected it or would expect it to do poorly. It's the wrong tone. It's an offensive tone. And it's exactly the kind of tone in these sales letters that we think are so great. You know what I've experimented with? And some of you don't think they're great. Some of you think they're horrible, and you don't try them. And honestly, your big business-looking offer page is not converting as high as it could because you haven't learned yet that those old-fashioned single-page sales letters, they work. But some of us think they work because they're just long. But it's not just because they're long. It's because of the vertical presentation and the vertical sequencing of the copy. In either case, we're stuck here because mostly, if you look at the data that we're presenting, we failed in our intuition. So what do we do?
Clint, it's Nick. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple of comments because, as you know, I was the author of the subject lines.
Yes.
So I was fairly deliberate in what I was trying to do with these three. And that first one, test your marketing intuition, in a way, was my neutral subject line. And I was trying to do two things with the other ones to see what would happen. And they're really relating to what you've been talking about and a couple of the comments that came from our listeners. That last one, so you think you're a marketing expert, is These subject lines went out, like you say, to an audience of marketers. It'd be very interesting to see how these styles would work against a consumer audience. But my guess when I put them together is that that third one would have a problem because it would set off an almost unconscious spam filter that we all have in our minds. Is it like you say, it borrows the language of overtly promotional emails, and there is that little spark of mistrust goes off in our minds when we hear that tone. Second one was I was really interested to see what would happen there because I've done in my past work with clients a lot of email subject line testing, and I found the only reliable thing where I was fairly certain to get a positive response on a subject line was to achieve recognition and trust. And trust is a word that one of our listeners talked about in response to that line. But we have in the from line, we say marketing experiments, and that's good. So people see it's from us, and hopefully if they receive our emails, they trust us. But I also think that there needs to be some recognition of who it's from in the subject line, because some people will scan the subject line with a lot more attention than they do the from line as they're quickly scanning through their emails. So it was, I mean, the difference in open rates are not huge, but if this was a massive consumer email, it could be significant. But I was very interested to see these results, because that's what I was hoping for, was that increasing the recognition of who it was from in the subject line would give that subject line a bit of spike in open rate.
I'll go a step further, Nick. I think that if the from section of this email letter could make it through the filters and it didn't identify as coming from MEC, you'd see a different number three would score even worse.
Yeah,
I think people open number three.
We all have that internal spam filter of our own.
Absolutely.
Just at a glance, we rate how highly we trust or don't trust an email.
Absolutely. I think it's an excellent point, and I think we've basically come to this place, and that is, so what has MEC learned about the use of intuition? Because it's not enough for us to tell you, hey, it doesn't work. I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm saying it's unreliable in certain circumstances. Let's figure out what some of those circumstances are and what the limitations are, and let's use that for the balance of this conversation. Nick, feel free to jump in. Aaron Rosenthal, who ran some of these tests, is on the line. He's a senior analyst with us also. Jalali Hartman and a number of our top guys are on here. So, you know, think about that. Also, think about your questions. This isn't a normal clinic. I'm not showing you how to compound testing results by controlling the sequence of which things you run through an A-B test or which elements. It's not that type of clinic. So the questions you have may be different. But if you're grappling with a problem that's related to intuition and or testing, then you're going to have a chance to ask me some questions in a few moments. You may want to kind of prepare for that. For now, I'm going to just move through a few things. Intuition and testing essentially are not mutually exclusive. Far from it. They go together. Being dependent on intuition alone leaves you flying blind, but crossing your fingers and hoping for the best. Same time, testing without being open to intuitive leaps tends to constrict breakthrough thinking. There's a way to meld the two, and as an anecdotal piece of evidence, I'll let Nick just mention what happened with him in Bridges.com when he was doing some work with newsletters. Go ahead and talk about that for a moment, Nick, and then I'll move into some actual numbered principles here.
Okay, and this is a kind of combination of a story about intuition and good leadership. There's a company called Bridges.com, and they're publishers of all kinds of information, but they publish a lot of newsletters for career counselors, so the career counseling industry. They go out to schools, municipalities, cities, all over North America. And this company was doing very well, and its newsletters tended to be fairly conservative, and I think they felt that was appropriate to their marketplace, and they did very well. And then they hired a young guy. He was 24 years old at the time, and he was reading through one of these newsletters, which is basically aimed at his group, sort of college and coming out into the workforce. And he read it, and his instinct, and in a way it's significant that he was 24 because he hadn't yet been molded by the industry he was in. But he looked at it, and his first honest response was, man, this is really boring. So he had this crazy idea, and it's probably an idea that's easier to have when you're 24 than when you're 44, but he had this idea, hey, why don't we do a newsletter in the voice of an alien from outer space, and we'll have this guy poke fun at all the silly jargon we use in this industry. So the next thing he did, which again showed a little bit of a courage on his part, is he went to the president of the company and he explained his idea and said, hey, I think we ought to do this. This is where the moment of good leadership came in, because the president said, sure, we'll try it. We'll test it. President wasn't the president for nothing, so he wasn't entirely foolish, and he said, we'll test it against 0.5% of one of our lists. But the to quickly wrap up the story, that newsletter became their largest subscription newsletter of all. They absolutely hit on something. Most of all, it grew because of word of mouth, because they were doing something worth talking about. So someone aged 20 would get this, and they would forward it to five friends or talk about it on a discussion list or something. And they had a huge subscription to this. Now, like I say, in terms of intuition, this is something where some kid had this kind of intuitive leap in his mind. But it is not something you would ever arrive at by testing. They could never have been testing their existing lineup of newsletters and have found results in those tests that would lead them towards the idea of having a newsletter written by an alien. So that's where the kind of intuitive leap came in. But like I said, they're a successful, smart company, and as soon as they got the idea, they had the courage to run with it. But they tested it very carefully and very vigorously before they rolled it out to a significant part of their list.
So it's a good example, and it brings me to a set of principles I'd like to give you. That may help you to determine how much you can trust yourself when you're trying to make marketing decisions. So let's begin with the first point, and that is intuition can be effective in determining what needs to be tested. It can provide the insights you need to decide which general direction to explore. Now, intuition and insight go very closely together, and there are certain things that quantitative analysis are not going to serve you with. For instance, we often suggest that you break up your typical A-B split test regimen by designing a completely off-the-wall, radical new design. You know, you can over-refine in the A-B split process especially when you're not doing multivariate testing and you want to come up with something that is completely different. We think you should more or less rock the boat with a page B sometimes that is radically different, and then you can drill down on the independent elements. We begin often A-B split testing not with just changing a single element, but actually trying to beat the control and then begin optimizing the elements. Intuition is very key to designing that other page. It's also key when you're just determining how you are designing a given element in the page. Maybe it's not the key in deciding which element to test, because there are some results that help us know. I mean, in some cases it can be, but there's a protocol. We talked about this in a clinic on the effects of testing in a certain sequence. But as to what three variations of that graphic ought to be developed, you need intuition involved in the process. So a second point is intuition may fail you when you attempt to predict which of these tests may prove successful. Depending on intuition to select one of your four possible email subject lines, for instance, is not a reliable way to maximize your chances of achieving the best open rate. We do it all the time. It's a travesty. It's not hard to test subject lines. Certainly not hard to test most of the essentials that we need to understand. And most of us, I mean, if there's a point in this clinic beyond helping you know when to use intuition, it's that some of us kind of have a vague sense of guilt because we're not testing enough. And I want to intensify your guilt. Don't rely on your intuition for everything. On the other hand, some of us feel guilty because we can't test everything. And you know what? You just can't test everything. It's all right to use intuition in those cases. This brings me to number three. Intuition can be used sometimes to dig deeper down into your test results. Sometimes it can help you glean an insight as to why the market behaved in a particular way. Sometimes you cannot quantify that. Sometimes that's a qualitative exploration. An example is we talked about the Joanne.com. It was hard numbers. It was testing that said the offer for a 10% discount for, along with two sewing machines was an effective offer. But it took intuition to dig down beneath and start trying to discern why that offer worked. I have found that I have a standard test protocol document that I use when I'm constructing a test. But it has a section in it that you won't find in most academic test documents. First, you know, the document, which I won't go through completely now, but it starts with the baseline metric that we're testing and, you know, the objective. It really begins with a question, and it eventually lays down the baseline metric, you know, what the constant has been thus far and the test interval and some of the mechanics. It's really just a one-page summary. But at the end of it is a section called Insights. And in that, after the test is done, we sit down and we violate a lot of our mathematical tendency or, you know, leanings and deliberately think about the insights that we glean from this. Not that math can't in itself involve insights, but I just find that if you're very, very focused on analytics, sometimes you miss key learnings. So we deliberately think about what insights can we glean from this test. What I like about that is, you know, 6 months from now on a given research project, there may be a whole notebook full of test protocols that summarizes the data, keeps you from having to wade through reads of analysis that you can go back to if you need to. You can drill down if you need to. But underneath that, with the summaries are all these insights that you're learning about your customers and how they think. And it's so useful when you're thinking about a new test or a new product to go back and look at that notebook again and pay attention to the insights. Brings me to number five. Let's go to number four. Intuition typically fails miserably when applied to initial test results. In the beginning stages of the test, the conclusions may be seriously flawed. You have to wait until you have a large enough sample. I don't know why this is. I'm going to make a fairly intuitive statement now. It's, I don't know if it's intuitive, but I don't have data to prove it, but I've had a lot of experience with data doing this. It seems like so many times initial test results in an A-B split test more or less lie to me. They come back suggesting a conclusion that reverses itself before all the tests is in. I have seen that happen over and over again. I don't know. Perhaps some academic here on the line may know something I don't know about why that may be and can send me a point that helps me understand it. But frankly, in my research, I've seen explanations, but none of them satisfied me, and I can't put my finger on the reason. But I can tell you this. I have seen marketing group after marketing group cut the test short because they got an initial promising result, think they have enough data, and then go off charging into the yonder blue with an inadequate set of test results and a poor set of action steps. They jumped the gun. It's really tempting for a marketer to take preliminary results, shut the test down, and move on and test the next thing. I have that happen. I've seen it over and over again. Don't do it. You're cheating yourself. I just saw a test this week where the initial test results were very promising. The secondary set of results, longer interval, completely reversed what the test results seem to be indicating. So that kind of covers point four and five of my notes. And essentially point six is that intuition is often limited in that it depends on previous. If you get a hold of this last point, I think it will help you to figure out when you can use your intuition and why to be cautious. It's often limited in that it depends on previous experiences. It depends on pattern recognition. Pattern recognition is a term that I've coined when I have tried to get underneath the the intuition process. And what I've discovered is that most of us call intuition this form of pattern recognition, where in the past we've experienced a pattern, and that pattern leads us down to a certain conclusion. And after two or three experiences with a similar pattern, we start to recognize that pattern in another situation, and we quickly form a conclusion. It's a useful phenomena or skill, but problem is you can't always rely on that, because you may make natural assumptions that are contrary to absolute changes in the context of that decision or to changing conditions in the marketplace. You know, typically the greatest resistors to the next most brilliant breakthrough is the progenitors of the last brilliant breakthrough. The people who made the last brilliant breakthrough are the ones who are typically resisting most aggressively those who are on the verge of the next breakthrough. It happens in companies, and of course it happens in societies. So, intuition has its use. It's particularly useful when you are reaching out, determine what to test, when you're trying to fill in a blank that can't be filled in quantitatively. But in areas of qualitative analysis or quantitative analysis, don't depend on intuition if it's feasible to test. So, having said all that, I'm going to open the phone lines. I'd like to caution you again. Please mute your phone with *6 if there's background noise. I want to warn my listeners that we may have, you know, some noise and this and that, but still we're going to try it. And then if you'll say your name first and let me call your name before you ask your question, I'll make sure everyone can hear your question and we can respond that way. Okay? So, Brian, if you'd like to take us off lecture mode. And someone just call out your name and ask a question.
This is Mike.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, just an observation, kind of a question. With regards to the test data on the subject lines and open rates and click-through rates, it seems like the first subject line actually performed the best when you multiply the open rate with the click-through rate.
There's that's a fairly true observation. I there's a number of, since the data just came live as we were talking, I haven't been able to do some confidence tests and other things that I'd like to perform when we're...
I can actually respond to that, Flint. This is Brian.
Yes.
That click-through rate is based on the entire mailing, not just on the people who opened it. So that would be probably in this test, even though we asked people to predict the open rate, the click-through rate is probably actually a truer indicator of success in this case.
Oh, good point.
Great. A follow-up with that, if I may.
Yes.
It seems like there's kind of a third point to this, which is conversion. And the conversion could be, and maybe I'm going too far in this, but the conversion could be with those three subject lines, which of those three subject lines yielded the most conference attendees? And because we all wanted to see the results of that, so which one actually got us here most? So possibly, and this is again going maybe a bit far, but when we look at email marketing, we have the open rate, the click-through rate, and the conversion rate. And the conversion in this case would be conference attendees. So which one yielded the most conference attendees? And again, that may be going too far, but it's an interesting observation.
Well, it is. And actually, and I don't know if it's conference attendees as it is participants in the test, but yes, you're correct. In the end, conversion is a key factor. You know what I find fascinating? I find fascinating that the click-through rate is lower. There's a substantial variance between, say, test your marketing intuition and so you think you're a marketing expert in the click-through rate, but there's a very close variable in the open rate. I think that people who read the test line read the copy with a greater degree of, I think it changes the way the copy feels. I think the subject line changes the way the copy feels because people are predisposed by the subject line itself psychologically because they all got the same copy. And it's fascinating to me, and it's another test that I'd like to do. But I think when our headline is wrong, the copy feels different. The same copy can feel different to the person who's reading it.
Clint, it's Nick. It's up in an attitude. Can I take a thought here?
Yes, go ahead.
One of the things I should have mentioned before, but which I didn't, is that when we look at the when we judge these lines, we really have to consider the context. These are subject lines in an email, and that is an environment that is open to so many factors when we look at our email inbox. What I would find fascinating is to actually run these same lines as headlines on a web page or headlines
sure.
within the email and see whether we got the same results. I mean, it could be that number three might outperform number one as a headline on a web page as opposed to being a subject line. Because I think in a subject line, we have to be cautious about that internal spam filter thing.
Which is again why intuition, I mean, in the end, what keeps you getting lost in theory as we're moving kind of in that direction now is the fact that if you're a marketer and you've got to test an email, what you really care about is open rate, CTR, and most of all, conversion. Or gross, most of all, not conversion, most of all, revenue in most cases, whatever that aggregated action is. And so it's specific. That's why testing is so important. That's why intuition is so dangerous. It's a very specific test to a very specific set of circumstances. And if you were a marketer, and we did this according to this precise formula, and we had another million to send, we'd know which one to send now. I might make one more refined test before I did the final send, but essentially that's how we would approach it. Good point from everyone. Someone else with a question?
Susan?
Okay.
Susan, go ahead, and then we'll take the next one. Go ahead, Susan.
This is kind of a challenge maybe to that, and don't take this the wrong way, but what happens when the circumstances of the environment change? In a classic test, like you just said, it's for that particular test, but when the environment changes, then doesn't intuition have to play a role in looking at that environment to see what changes might affect?
It does, and also you want to tighten your test up to control environmental changes as much as possible. For instance, sequential testing can replace A-B split testing, but A-B split testing has a denser set of environment variables, so it gives you a higher result. Problem is, if you wait and do the actual mailing a month after you did the A-B split test, and particularly if there's a news headline or some other variable or seasonal variables, it can impact you. So it's better to do your best to limit that problem and to factor in your intuition and to recognize that this is not a precise science. But in most cases, in practical circumstances, mostly if we run the test right, we get a predicted result.
The other thing I wanted to mention was that I don't know that classic direct marketing and honesty are mutually exclusive either. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at a 1961 classic direct mail text, how to write, and it comes down to relevance. And I think that it's really a step, like you said, in the vertical copy format of picking that person through the process of attention, interest, desire, action in words that are relevant to their own experience, making them feel like this would benefit them. And I think that's really the
absolutely.
Key, no matter how
it absolutely. It's just that I've done this test. I actually, in an experiment, I went back and got an actual ad that ran in the Altoona, Pennsylvania, in Altoona, in the primary newspaper for snake oil.
Okay.
And I compared the copy with modern copy. And what you'll see is a trend from 100 years ago going forward where people trust less and less the words of advertising. You could get away. I mean, the Altoona, this company selling with this incredibly hyped, clearly dishonest copy grew so fast that their factory occupied an entire city block in Altoona.
Oh, sure.
You could take the same ad, which I tried to do, and run it in major newspapers today, and you wouldn't get what would you get in terms of response? I could not only figure that out, I could not get a single newspaper in America to run it for me. They all rejected it. I tried to run the identical copy.
But there are other legitimate people that do direct marketing, not just...
Oh, absolutely. Business. Absolutely. And there's we've been in direct marketing for... We believe in it. There's much to be learned from that, and some of the best Internet marketers I know of come from a direct marketing background. And there's classic things, and there's things that surprise us. Susan, one of the things that amazed me is is integral to the sentence I just used. In television, which I've done a lot of testing with also, words that we think today are overused and trite and cliche still work. One of the tests that I saw was amazing, the word amazing, like amazing magic tricks, amazing police chase, those kinds of things, they may sound corny as possible, but they pull a higher set of numbers on a national basis where you're aggregating the entire population of the U.S. or the television market.
We're not our audience. Our audience isn't us. We're not
exactly right.
Why, probably.
Someone else had a question. I heard it was a man. I didn't hear your name, but go ahead.
My name is Malchus.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the questions I have is, what is the rule of thumb for the length or number of characters in a subject line? One of the main reasons I didn't choose number three was because it was bordering on being lengthy. And when I send emails, I always try to pack a big punch or to reel, to hook the viewer in the first few words. I'm looking at my Outlook Professional Edition 2003 right now. And looking at my email, I'm only seeing about 25 characters. Now, I know there's bars that allow you to slide back and forth so that you can reveal the entire subject line if you want. But in order to see all of your mail folders as well as what's in your inbox, plus the email in the main pane that you're viewing, the way I have mine set up now, and I'm sure the way I typically have it set up, it's probably between 25 and 30 characters.
I'm not down
anyway,
the door if I can.
My question,
you know, to your question, I think that I've always, all my research has indicated that the first three words are among the most critical words, and depending on length, not character. Obviously, character is important, but more to the point, it's been my experience in email that many email marketers bomb with a mailing. Because unlike almost every other piece of sales copy we write, the most important point is not the offer, it's the connector. The connector is that piece of information that tells me why you're sending me an email. And that happens when you identify the company you're with or some reason for me to open, read the email. And so what I have discovered is that whereas we're used to leading with the offer or leading with curiosity to get people down into the offer and all the other things that we do in different types of copy, it's a mistaken email. Not only you're right about concentrating on the first few words, but I have always found that if I can get the word from so-and-so or the actual name, for instance, if my name has recognition with you, an email in the subject line that says Dr. McLaughlin or, you know, whatever you know me by is going to get far more opens than just an email that is from with a general headline. So in general, I think that we must pay much attention. And this is for a subject for a completely different experiment or a set of experiments in a report. But I think the connector is a critical piece in every email. I think connector, and then I think tone. Email must eschew sales language and stay away from it as much as possible, sales words and language, in most cases, to be effective. I've also experimented with email that was very personal. I know I tested this with a camera group, and we had significant improvement in email response when he sent out the CEO began to send out deliberately chatty emails mentioning this holiday season, what his family was doing in a very genuine way, and then, you know, inviting them to participate in something they were doing on their site, you know, and something he was excited about that he could offer them. But he started using the word folks and talking to them like they were friends, and it was extremely effective. And so, you know, tone is also a critical factor. I think I'm out of time, and I know you've sent me emails, and this is a different type of briefing today. Could you give me just quick comments? Are you finding this clinic helpful?
Yes.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Right on.
All right. Well, if you have other thoughts or questions, email us. If we can, it's hard for us because of all the research we do. I spend 6 hours a day, guys, just thinking and writing and not even taking calls. But we've got a whole team here, and they're all working, and we do answer you. So if you've got a question, and we can, we'll try. Email us. And
tell us quickly where to find that article on transparent marketing that you wrote.
That's a good question.
Oh, yeah.
Brian, can you give them an immediate answer on that?
It's on the website. It should be. I know you can search for it. I'll go ahead and add a link to this notes page as well.
You'll add a link to the notes page, and if you go to the website and search transparent marketing, it'll come up also. And after you read it, send me your notes or your thoughts on it. And any ideas or your thoughts about the conference today, send those to us. And then, we're trying to pick the right research partners for part of 2006. And when we can get there's several experiments we're going to do once we find the right ones. One of them is in email marketing. We're calling through applications, trying to find the groups that can help us get the right tests. And if I find the right ones, I've got a whole series of experiments about email marketing that we're going to conduct that will help you with some of the questions that you've asked. So I just thank you for your trust, and we'll keep working, and let's keep talking together. You have a wonderful day.
Great. You too. Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
All right.